Jerusalem is one of the most historically interesting cities of the past. It's one of the most fascinating cities of today. And Jerusalem has a great future. And the picture can be seen, and a beautiful picture that I recall of Jerusalem. Jerusalem, the city with the setting sun, and the sun that reflecting off of Mount of Olives and the Dome of the Rock. Certainly we see picture after picture of Jerusalem. This is also the city that is packed with the tourists where do come to see where all the events of history have taken place. And since it has been established, Jerusalem has been ravaged by war. It has been rebuilt. It has been burned. It has been rebuilt. It has been ransacked. It has been rebuilt. It has been torn to pieces again. And has been rebuilt and probably rebuilt more than any other city on earth. Some of the most beautiful buildings ever built were built in Jerusalem. Two of them no longer exist, the Temple of Solomon, and then later the temple built by Herod. The Dome of the Rock is a beautiful structure of itself. But Jerusalem is the holy city to three world religions, that of Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. And it is a city that is filled with shrines and monuments and historic sites. Jerusalem was not always the city that we see that it is today. In fact, there was a time when these hillsides were just merely pastures for the herds and the flocks of the nomadic herdsmen. We have to go back 1900 years before Christ to the call of Abraham out of Uz and back into Genesis. And we find here the first reference to this place of Jerusalem. Now, Abraham was called by God to leave Ur of the Chaldees. He journeyed to the land of Canaan that someday would be his. The promise that was given to him as a possession for his descendants. And from that, Abraham knew at least two things. One was that God was going to give him children. That's the only way he was going to have descendants. And the second thing was that the land was going to be his. Well, of course, we know that the famine set in and they went to Egypt. Abraham and his entourage and Abraham and his nephew Lot came back to the land of Canaan. There Lot selected the lower Jordan Valley, the Dead Sea region for his homeland. Abraham settled in what would be later called the Judean Hills. And during this time, of course, there was no major powers as such. There were no world powers. The powers that were in existence at this time were those of a strong king from a city. And oftentimes they would go out to conquer another city, or they would band together as a group of an alliance to go and try to capture someone else. This happened, of course, in the occasion of Lot, that 10 kings band together and came down and took the lower part captive, a lower part of this Canaan captive. Among those people that were taken captive was Lot and his family. And when Abraham learned about this, of course, he gathered together his men and they pursued them. And in their pursuit, they overtook them and released Lot and defeated the kings. And when they came back from the defeat of the kings, we find then this in Genesis, the 14th chapter, and the 18th verse, the first reference to this place that would later be called Jerusalem. Genesis 14, 18. And Melchizedek, king of Salem, brought out bread and wine. Now he was a priest of God Most High. He brought out bread and wine, and he fed Abraham and his people, refreshed them there. But who was this Melchizedek? He was more than a king, but we see according to this verse that he was a high priest of God. We also know that Abraham tied to him. Verse 20, and blessed be God Most High, who has delivered your enemies into your hand, and he gave him a tenth of all that he had. The apostle that wrote, or the writer who wrote, the Hebrews, in Hebrews the 7th chapter, and commenting upon Melchizedek And the book of Hebrews is a book that continues to give us the theme, superior than. Everything that is a type from the Old Testament becomes an anti-type, and that is superior than these things. We see then that Christ is superior even to the Old Testament priesthood, and that he is superior and likened unto Melchizedek, who was handpicked by God for his position. We see here in chapter 7 in the first three verses, "For this Melchizedek, king of Salem, priest of the Most High God, who met Abraham as he was returning from the slaughter of the kings, and blessed him, to whom also Abraham apportioned the tenth part of all the spoils, refers first of all by the translation of his name, King of Righteousness, and then also King of Salem, which is a king of peace, without father, without mother, without genealogy, having neither beginning of days nor end of life, but made like the Son of God, he abides a priest perpetually." There's a lot of interesting facts just in those few verses about Melchizedek. We find more information about him here in Hebrews the 7th chapter than we do over in Genesis the 14th chapter. But we see that he was a priest of the whole Most High God, that his name meant righteousness, and that he was king of Salem, which had to do with peace. And thus Abraham was obedient to God. He brought to Melchizedek then these tithes. God was showing in advance that he had a plan for this place to be his future headquarters. We see a 500-year gap then that takes place here. Very strange as we look at this city that becomes so predominant through the rest of the book, the rest of the Bible. But there is a 500-year time period here when there little is known about this city of Salem, which was to become Jerusalem. We know that the Canaanites lived in the land. But during the days of Abraham and the settling of the children of Israel in the promised land, we have only a brief encounter that directs our attention to that city. And one of the best known episodes in the Bible was God's instructions to Abraham to take his son Isaac to Mount Moriah and there to sacrifice him. And through this tremendous example of faith, we again have a hint of God's future for the city of Jerusalem. Bible scholars have concluded that Mount Moriah, where Abraham came to offer Isaac, may have been the very spot which Jerusalem, where the temple was built and later constructed there. And we see the willingness of Abraham here to offer up Isaac on Mount Moriah to be sacrificed. And it is, of course, a striking parallel here. It was God who offered up his son for the sins of the world. The crucifixion of Jesus took place in the environs of Jerusalem. There is this spiritual parallel. Well, of course, in the course of time, the descendants of Abraham came to live in Lower Egypt because of the famine. Jacob and his 12 sons and their families found relief there and were to remain there for a few hundred years. And during the first 100 years in Egypt, the Israelites made a significant contribution to the prosperity of the land. A Pharaoh of Upper Egypt came to the throne who did not know the good of Joseph and the early Israelites. Earlier Israelites had contributed to Egypt. He made them slaves. Their population, though, under the oppression grew to about 2.5 million. And it was, of course, under the leadership of Moses that Israel was led out of Egypt. And after 40 years of wandering in the Sinai wilderness, they came to the east bank of the Jordan River, in which they prepared to cross. Of course, Moses died there before they entered into the promised land, but Joshua was chosen the leader. And we find then with the fall of Jericho, the fall of Ai, and the fall of several other cities. But then we see the king of Jerusalem, Adonai Zadok. Jerusalem was a city that was inhabited by a tribe of the Canaanites called the Jebusites. And the name of the town was called Jebusai. And Adonai Zadok formed an alliance with four other kings, thinking that they could withstand the oncoming armies of the Israelites. But God promised the land to the Israelites. And the Jebusite army was defeated, and they fled through Beth Horon Pass and out to the valley of Ajalon, where God rained down great hailstones upon them. Another event that happened in the valley of Ajalon was the long day of Joshua, where the sun stood still for almost a whole day while the Israelite army defeated the Jebusites and their allies. In spite of this victory, however, Joshua did not choose to occupy the city of Jebusai or Jerusalem. It simply was not God's time to choose Jerusalem. Shiloh in the north became the tribal capital at this time. And the area of Jerusalem and the south became part of the territory that was allocated to the tribe of Judah. In Joshua, the 15th chapter and verse 8, we see the division as it took place here. Joshua 15 and 8. Then the border went to the valley of Ben-Hinnom to the slope of the Jebusite on the south, that is Jerusalem. And the border went up to the top of the mountain, which is before the valley of Hinnom, to the west, which is at the end of the valley of Rephaim toward the north. And so we see the boundaries laid out here in verse 63 of this same chapter. It says, "Now as for the Jebusites, the inhabitants of Jerusalem, the sons of Judah could not drive them out. So the Jebusites lived with the sons of Judah at Jerusalem until this day." And so they did not drive out the Jebusites. They apparently chose not to drive them out of this city. And so the Jebusites came back, resettled in the city. Well, after the death of Joshua, we find in Judges the first chapter and verse 8, Judges 1:8, "Then the sons of Judah fought against Jerusalem and captured it and struck it with the edge of the sword and set the city on fire." But again, Judah, even after capturing it at this time, they really did not build a permanent settlement here. And the Jebusites moved back in, and they possessed it for another 300 years. And near the end of that time, Israel desired to be a nation like the other nations around them. They wanted a king like the other nations, and they wanted a capital city like the other nations. And they rejected God, and they rejected Samuel. God let them have Saul then as their king, but Saul would not follow God's orders. God rejected him yet again. He delayed choosing Jerusalem as the capital city. And as the reign of Saul became more corrupt, God began to prepare his choice for a king over Israel. And it was David, a man after God's own heart, according to Acts 13:22. But notice 2 Samuel and verse 5 and verses 4 and 5 here. 2 Samuel chapter 5 and verses 4 and 5. 2 Samuel 5 verses 4 and 5. "David was 30 years old when he became king, and he reigned 40 years. At Hebron he reigned over Judah 7 years and 6 months. And in Jerusalem he reigned 33 years over Israel and Judah." Not only does this tell us about the length of the reign of David, but it also tells us that there was this difference that is made here in the pages of the Scripture of where he reigned. Because now things were beginning to change, and God was choosing. At last, after 900 years, after Abraham brought Isaac to Mount Moriah, nearly 400 years after Israel took possession of the land, Jerusalem became the national capital of the nation. And this was the real beginning of what probably became the most loved, the most beautiful, the most controversial, the most war-torn city in the history of man. And it is ironic that the name Jerusalem means city of peace. Jerusalem has not been able to symbolize peace hardly at all throughout its entire history. It did not have a pretentious beginning. After David moved in, he established his residence here. He had a walled city. He built a palace. The territory here became known as the City of David. The entire area encompassed only about 12 acres of land. And probably fewer than 2,000 people lived here during the time of David. But why did David choose Jerusalem? Did he know that Melchizedek had been there? Did he think that Mount Moriah was the spot in which Abraham came to a long ago? Did he plan originally that the threshing floor of Ornan the Jebusite that was north of the city of Jerusalem would become the site of the temple? Did he have any kind of concept that Jerusalem someday would become the center of God's rulership on the earth? Well, probably not. Probably none of those things. David probably never clearly recognized the significance of all these threads of history. But what was important, of course, is that God knew. And David built a fine palace there, and it is interesting that the Messiah will rule from the throne of his father David. Isaiah 9, verses 6 and 7, "For a child will be born to us, a son will be given to us, and the government will rest on his shoulders, and his name will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Eternal Father, Prince of Peace. There will be no end to the increase of his government or of peace on the throne of David and over his kingdom, to establish it and to uphold it with justice and righteousness. From then on and forevermore, the zeal of the Lord of hosts will accomplish this." We know that Solomon built a temple here at Jerusalem then. It was something that David was not allowed to do, but Solomon did. And the Queen of Sheba had this to say in 1 Kings, the 10th chapter, and verses 6 and 7. Says, "Then she said to the king, 'It was a true report which I heard in my own land about your words and your wisdom. Nevertheless, I did not believe the reports until I came and my eyes had seen it. And behold, the half was not told me. You exceed in wisdom and prosperity the report which I heard.'" And the temple was an ornate thing that Solomon built. It was overlaid with gold. It had all sorts of precious metal and stones that were put together. But after Solomon's death, of course, the kingdom was divided. And then later the Chaldeans destroyed Jerusalem. And they left it in rubble. And they carried away all these precious stones and metals and all the items from the temple. And the Persian kings later on allowed the Jews to return and to rebuild the temple in the city. And this second temple had just very little glory of the first temple, of Solomon's temple. And within 250 years, Jerusalem was once again torn to pieces. In 167 B.C., Antiochus Epiphanes destroys large segments of the city. He polluted the temple itself by sacrificing a swine's blood on the altar. And during the first century B.C., the Roman war machine came in and gained control. And they put Herod in place. He began to rebuild the splendor of Jerusalem, and in particular to restore the temple and making it indeed an impressive edifice. And it was this temple that Jesus visited during the days of his ministry. We know in AD 70, then Jerusalem was destroyed under Titus. The Jewish people were scattered throughout the known world. Jerusalem was not a predominant city any longer. In the 300s AD, the Roman Emperor Constantine professed himself a Christian, and Christianity became the dominant influence in the empire. In the 600s AD, the Muslim Arabs gained control of Jerusalem. A magnificent structure then was built there called the Dome of the Rock on the Temple Mount. The Temple Mount to the Muslims is the site from which their prophet Muhammad traditionally was said to ascend to heaven. And by AD 1100, the European crusader Christians had taken Jerusalem. But they lost it once again to the Muslims less than a century later. And early in the 1500s, the Ottoman Turks captured Jerusalem. And it was under the Turks some of the Jews were allowed to return. And by the late 1800s, the Jews formed the largest ethnic population in Jerusalem, but it was still under the Turkish government. Well, Turkey chose to allow ally itself with the Imperial Germans during World War I, and the British forces fought during World War I in the Middle East. In 1917, under General Edmund Allenby, the British took control of what was then called Palestine. And for a period of time, the British ruled Palestine under a mandate. In 1947, the United Nations approved the establishment of the Jewish state. And the modern nation of Israel was then born with that. But it was going to be a year later, on May 1st in 1948, when it actually became a nation. But after the UN had voted and made the announcement of the establishment of the State of Israel, there was a war broke out between the Arabs and the Jews, and Jerusalem became a divided city. And Jordan controlled the east part, the old Jerusalem, and many of the artifacts there, and the territories on the west bank of the Jordan River. And then in the Six-Day War of 1967... between the Israelites and the Arabs, among the properties that were taken by Israel during that time was the old section of Jerusalem, thus uniting the city, and they moved their capital then from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, and has remained under Jewish control ever since. We know that even with the recent peace accords that are taking place, and that have been signed between the Palestinians and the Jordan, that Jerusalem is still a point of contention, and tempers run very high over who is going to control Jerusalem, and the Arabs desire earnestly to have control again of at least the old section of Jerusalem, but they would really desire to have control of the whole city, and have said so even before signing the peace accords. But more important than the 4,000 years of history is the future of this great city in relation to the world. When the ancient nation of Judah went astray, God said in 2 Kings 23 and verse 27, 2 Kings 23 and verse 27, and the Lord said, I will remove Judah also from my sight, as I have removed Israel, and I will cast off Jerusalem, this city which I have chosen, and the temple of which I have said my name shall be there. But through Zechariah, God made a promise. In Zechariah, the first chapter, and verse 17, Zechariah 1:17, he says, again proclaim, saying, thus says the Lord of hosts, my cities will again overflow with prosperity, and the Lord will again comfort Zion and again choose Jerusalem. God did not cast off Jerusalem forever. Jerusalem shall become this time the world capital, and it will be never cast off again. It will become the permanent headquarters of the government of God. Isaiah, speaking on this in Isaiah the 40th chapter, and the first two verses there, Isaiah 40, verses 1 and 2, Isaiah 40, and verses 1 and 2. Comfort, O comfort my people, says your God. Speak kindly to Jerusalem, and call out to her that her warfare has ended, that her iniquity has been removed, that she has received of the Lord's hand double for all her sins. And then verses 10 and 11 here. Behold, the Lord God will come with might, with his arm ruling for him. Behold, his reward is with him and his recompense before him. Like a shepherd, he will tend his flock. In his arm, he will gather the lambs and carry them in his bosom. He will gently lead the nursing ewes. And among the other prophets, the prophet Micah had this to say. Micah, the first chapter. Micah, the fourth chapter. Micah, the fourth chapter, and verses 1 and 2. And it will come about in the last days that the mountain of the house of the Lord will be established as the chief of the mountains, and it will be raised above the hills, and the peoples will stream to it. And many nations will come and say, come and let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob, that he may teach us about his ways, and that we may walk in his paths. For from Zion will go forth the law, even the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. And then notice this in Zechariah 14. Zechariah 14, verses 4 and 5. First, verses 4 and 5. And in that day his feet will stand on the Mount of Olives, which is in front of Jerusalem on the east. And the Mount of Olives will be split in its middle from east to west by a very large valley, so that half of the mountain will move toward the north and the other half toward the south. And you will flee by the valley of my mountains, for the valley of the mountains will reach to Hazael. Yes, you will flee, just as you fled before the earthquake in the days of Uzziah, king of Judah. Then the Lord my God will come, and all the holy ones with him. And verses 8 and 9, and it will come about in that day that the living waters will flow out of Jerusalem, half of them toward the eastern sea, and the other half toward the western sea. It will be in summer as well as in winter. And the Lord will be king over all the earth. And that day the Lord will be the only one, and his name the only one. And so we say, God speed the day when Jerusalem really is called the city of peace, and the whole world will enjoy the peace and the prosperity that will come in the future Jerusalem.